It is a pleasure to introduce our next instructor based in New York. Nitin Sacheti is the founder and portfolio manager of Papyrus Capital, where he implements a bottom-up investment process honed over 12 years, focusing on free cash flow and intrinsic value. Previously, he was a senior analyst at a few investment funds, including Cobalt Capital and Tiger Europe Management. He graduated from the University of Chicago with a BA in economics and was a visiting undergraduate student in economics at Harvard University. Nitin has shared his wisdom and ideas with our members in the past, and we are truly grateful he has chosen this opportunity to be with us again. So, on behalf of the MOI Global membership community, a very warm welcome to you, Nitin. Please go ahead.
All right. Thank you so much, John. So it's always been fun doing this conference and working with you. So I'm excited and appreciative of the invitation and you're having me back this year. Interestingly enough, I'm actually presenting the same idea I presented the last 2 years. The stock is down pretty significantly in 2018 for some unforeseen reasons that I'll get into, despite the thesis playing out as expected. So, with the stock down so much, this is EchoStar, SATS is the ticker. With the stock down so much, I think the thesis hasn't changed, so there's even more upside that we're playing for now versus a year ago, which is why I'm excited to share it again with everyone, along with sort of an update on what's happened with the business positively in terms of overall fundamentals and operations this year. So, turning to slide three, just a very short introduction on Papyrus. So we're a long biased, long short fund. We launched in January of 2016, as John said, investing in primarily equities, mispriced mainly in developed markets, and a process focused on sort of free cash flow generation and intrinsic value over my 13-year investment career. Aside from that, the majority of our longs are invested in what we call well-managed businesses. So these are businesses run by great owner managers that we think are slowly building value over time and reinvesting in high IRR projects where we get involved and we get to know the management teams and we hold for years. And sort of this is exactly what we think EchoStar is, and essentially the most attractive of sort of these well-managed longs for us. This is sort of a similar slide that we had last year. So why do we like EchoStar? What is an overview of the opportunity? We think, again, very high quality owner manager. I'll get into more detail, but Charlie Ergen, we think, knows the satellite industry better than anyone else. He identifies key trends years ahead of others, and this sometimes creates lumpiness in the business and short-term uncertainty, which is some of the reason why the stock is down this past year, and I'll get into that again in more detail. But I think Charlie is just he's very thoughtful, self-made billionaire who thinks years ahead of everybody else. We think there are positive secular trends that I'll get into in the overall business in terms of sort of a monopoly slash duopoly in broadband in rural areas and exposure to 5G again is also sort of a monopoly duopoly structure. We think because of the IP and the great management team, they have a lot of great capital, great ways to reinvest capital in terms of smart capital allocation. And we're excited about any business like this where we think has credible IP, lots of reinvestment opportunities where the business can or the company can reinvest at a low 20s IRR, which we think of is very, very hard to find. On top of all of that, it's an extremely attractive multiple, about 3.5x EBITDA right now for some forced selling reasons in the stock this past year that I'll get into. In terms of the overall business, what does EchoStar do? One, they sell Ka-band, satellite broadband. So this is Ka-band frequency, which is a high frequency satellite. and which means higher throughput. So their satellites offer broadband speeds of about 25 megabits per second to areas that are, you know, not passed by wireless or, you know, cable broadband. So, you know, you have a cabin in the Catskills and you have no other access to internet. So you are going to use these Ka-band satellites of EchoStar's for internet service. And again, this is, you know, I've been to the satellite show for the last 8, 10 years. I've talked to a ton of industry experts and I've gotten very comfortable that this is not the sort of IP that can be recreated very easily. And you've seen that in sort of how the satellite industry overall has sort of gone upside down in that there are a lot of satellite companies that are losing share in data. I mean, Intelsat, SES, Eutelsat, you've seen sort of the stock price declines, the earnings declines. The only reason Intelsat has come back somewhat is because of, you know, C-band terrestrial spectrum, but that's a totally different animal. The core business is pretty much in shambles. And some of that is because, you know, guys like EchoStar and Viasat that have this Ka-band IP are able to, you know, create these, build these satellites at one-tenth of the cost per bit. So they're, you know, one-tenth of the of sort of the place on the cost curve, much lower, you know, than their competitors, which is providing them with a long-term opportunity, you know, that these other companies haven't been able to recreate even over the last 5, 7 years. On top of the Ka-band opportunity, SATS also has a business that sells fixed satellite service. So this is satellite serve for you know, television, so you know, Dish Television, Bell Canada, and again, this is for TV service in rural areas. You know, this isn't growing by any means, but it is a contracted revenue stream where some of the OTT risk is offset by the increase from, you know, 1080p to 4K. So you know, we think it's a pretty stable revenue stream in North America. Aside from that, they also have a core business where they offer broadband services to commercial businesses outside of the terrestrial, you know, wireless footprint. So again, this is very similar to what they're doing for consumer broadband, but, you know, for enterprises. On top of the core businesses, and I'll get into valuation, you know, these core businesses are what I mentioned earlier is valued at 3.5x EBITDA. On top of the core businesses, they, you know, EchoStar has a bunch of free options. So the first is this Ka-band IP. You know, the ability right now, they have two satellites over the US, Viasat has two satellites over the US, and EchoStar has some, you know, payloads on other satellites over South America. But, you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg in terms of long-term service, which I'll get into in a minute. But the point is that they have the ability to, you know, build more of these satellites, as I mentioned, at low 20s IRRs. And I think that's worth a lot in the future. You know, Brazil, they have sort of a Brazil-South America business where they're selling broadband in South America, setting up businesses in individual countries that, you know, and they're growing subscribers there. Mexico, they have a 49% ownership in Dish Mexico, which was a satellite television business. It's a JV. It has great distribution. They've recently sort of improved their channel lineup. And, you know, this is unconsolidated because it's 49% owned in terms of, you know, in terms of EBITDA earnings. But we think it has pretty significant upside as they grow subscribers there. And if there's a potential sale of that business over time. The last free option is spectrum that they own, wireless spectrum that they own in Europe, that we think over the next 3 to 5 years is worth standalone, the entire market cap of the company or enterprise value of the company. So again, I'll get into that in more detail. Now, as I mentioned earlier, the stock is down, you know, 40% between the end of 2017 and the end of 2018. So, you know, I pitched this last year clearly at $60, and I thought it was super interesting then and worth well over $100. And I can tell you fundamentally, nothing's changed. And if anything, the thesis is playing out, and the business is done all of the things that we thought it would do in 2018, but there was forced selling. And I think that forced selling is really what's causing this to be, you know, was a great opportunity last year, and this is an even better opportunity now. So what is the forced selling? Three hedge funds, all page one holders, all closed down in 2018 and liquidated their stakes very, very quickly. So, you know, one fund I know for a fact took the stock from 58 to 50. Another one, you know, took it into the mid 40s. And then, you know, there was a large mutual fund. So this is a mutual fund that owned 11 plus million shares. You know, they saw massive redemptions too, and they had to sell their stake. And 11 million shares in a company like SATS is really hard to sell when Charlie owns half the business and it's much less liquid than you might imagine. So again, stock down 40%, yet despite that, the point is that nothing has really fundamentally changed. Revenue's up, you know, from $1.9 billion in 2017 to $2.14 billion in 2018. Dish revenue exposure has gone down as they've sought to diversify away from, you know, revenue concentration. You know, EBITDA is up 15%. Hughes EBITDA is up 32%. So, you know, posting great growth numbers, high incremental margins in this business. You know, because that Hughes EBITDA really has very little CapEx, incremental CapEx associated with it. You know, Hughes subscribers have gone up 200,000. So that's as they sort of launched their Jupiter 3 satellite, and, you know, they've grown subscribers in the US and in South America. So, you know, subscriber growth has been great. They, as we talk about the Ka band IP, they've set up a JV with Yahsat to essentially provide consumer broadband in Africa. You know, as kind of the satellite capacity gets up and running and they start to grow distribution, you know, Africa is going to provide an additional revenue segment for them, and just goes back to, you know, the what we talked about earlier in terms of the high 20s IRRs. And it also speaks to management. If they think that they're not experts in a particular country, they're willing to set up JVs, and they have a history of doing this, to have a local partner execute while they contribute their IP. Now, on top of that, again, like I mentioned earlier, they've set up two Ka band payloads and service in Brazil, Colombia, Peru, and several other South and Central American countries. They're still growing subscribers there. If anything, in these countries, you know, satellite broadband at 25 megabits per second competes with terrestrial cable, because the cable pipe isn't as, you know, isn't fully digital, DOCSIS, in some of these countries. And same thing with wireline, copper is a little bit more ubiquitous in these countries. So, you know, they're competing not only in rural areas, but in urban areas too. So there's a larger addressable market. You know, Jupiter 3, their next satellite, it's under construction. And it's got an anticipated service launch in 2021 at over 100 megabits per second. And I think the important point here is that, you know, Moore's Law is helping them grow their speeds or increase their speeds. So Jupiter 1 was 15 megabits a second. Jupiter 2 was 25. Jupiter 3 is over 100. So, you know, the point is that addressable market for them is actually growing as they're able to lower the cost per bit. So the other point to mention, too, is that, you know, you're talking about 100 megabits per second for the same overall satellite build cost. And you're talking about significant capacity expansion. So what does that mean? It means a lower cost per bit, right? The cost to build, you know, a unit of capacity declines. And so when that happens, clearly that's a function of, you know, benefits to Moore's Law and efficiency that they're getting in their satellites. And their competition, terrestrial DSL, or, you know, dial-up in rural areas is not improving, as you could imagine. So if anything, their addressable market is expanding, and their returns on invested capital are also expanding, assuming that, you know, the price per bit doesn't decline as much as the cost per bit. They also initiated a stock buyback in Q4 of 2018 and bought back some stock when they saw the stock getting stupid cheap into the 30s, which is where it is now, even still. The one other point I would mention is that there was a failed bid to acquire Inmarsat this year, but I think they're likely to come back to the table. I think there's a lot of benefits of combining Inmarsat and EchoStar. I think the first is that EchoStar has a Solaris European spectrum that I've mentioned was one of the free options here worth the entire market cap or EV of the company that I think, Inmarsat owns the other piece of that S-band spectrum in Europe. I think combining that creates huge scale to offer, a high throughput wholesale LTE capacity network for European carriers in 5G. So I think that's similar to what Charlie's trying to do with Dish in the U.S. He's potentially trying to do with SATs in Europe. So I think that's valuable. I think it increases SATs' Ka-band orbital slots because Inmarsat owns a lot of these. So if you can effectively integrate your Jupiter IP into these Ka-band orbital slots, like Inmarsat has with their Global Express constellation, I think that, again, hugely lowers cost per bit, just given the IP advantage and the technology advantage that EchoStar has on Ka-band satellites. There's also some synergy to consolidating in-flight businesses because they both, have them. So again, if you just look at the year and you look at everything that's happened, I think that it's been a great year for the company. And I think that if you had asked me if I had seen, everything but the first bullet on this page at the beginning of last year as sort of, a look into the future, if I saw these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 bullets, and you told me to predict what the stock price would be from 59.90 at the beginning of last year with these bullets coming to fruition, I would have told you that this stock would have been, 80, 90 bucks. But one, in fact, it's actually down to 36. So, I mean, what does that tell you in terms of the opportunity and how much better it is now versus it even was even were a year ago? So that's kind of an overview of the year. Again, as I mentioned, Charlie, and I'll go faster because I've already sort of discussed some of these issues. But Charlie, great manager, founded Dish with 500,000 in savings. High market cap, large market cap now. Charlie's worth a lot of money. I think he's very good about asymmetric optionality, and I think he's put some nuggets into EchoStar that I think over time will generate huge, huge value for the company. Already discussed the Ka-band satellites. I think this is sort of the crown jewel at SATS. Technology shift has happened that allows for 10x the capacity for the same construction cost as legacy Ku-band satellites. So again, 1/10 the cost per bit. I think this enables new markets like consumer broadband, where previously, Ku-band could get 2 to 3 megabits per second. Nobody really cared about paying up for that, whereas these satellites can do 25 megabits per second. So that increases the addressable market, increases customers' willingness to pay for broadband. 5G, I think this is the next use case for their Ka-band satellites. So when you're talking about cell phone towers in rural areas, those cell phone towers are, they need something to do the offload, right? Because you can't lay out, fiber or coaxial cable to a tower in a rural area because it's just too expensive. So the way you do it is you put a satellite dish on the top of the tower. So, you're in that rural area, you're on your phone, you're pulling up a YouTube video, you talk to the tower, that tower's got to pull that data from the data center somehow. And so if there's no, wire attached to the tower, it's got to pull it up through satellite. And so this is clearly the way that we're going to see the 5G industry go, where one, it gets rolled out in 2023, 2024 into rural areas, they're going to have to trunk that data somehow, and this is the cheapest and most effective way to trunk that data. So I think there's a huge long-term opportunity for, outside of consumer broadband for these satellites. Again, I mentioned the other core businesses and sort of the fixed satellite side. Enterprise side, I think you can look at these as, utility-like revenue streams that are stable and predictable and contracted. And in terms of the free options, again, I mentioned Solaris, the European spectrum. So this is 30 megahertz of spectrum in Europe. This is satellite spectrum, and they're getting the approvals for terrestrial. And I think, as you look at the Italian spectrum auction that happened in 2018, a few months ago, and you look at just sort of what US spectrum pricing has gone for and sort of what the case is in 5G and the value of spectrum as, we need a lot more throughput on our phones. You put something like 30 to 40 cents per megahertz pop on this Solaris spectrum, which I think is very, very conservative. You're getting, the entire market cap of EchoStar, enterprise value EchoStar. Other free options, Dish Mexico, which I mentioned, South America, I mentioned, and, future Ka-band. I think, SATs can do an acquisition like Inmarsat that gives them more cash flow and more scale to then build more of these Ka-band satellites. They can do JVs like they did with Yahsat. They can just go at it alone and they have $30 in gross cash per share on the balance sheet. They can build more of these satellites and, realize a low 20s IRR on them. What's the business worth? So in terms of, EBITDA minus CapEx, the way I'm looking at CapEx is I'm normalizing. I'm looking at the current fleet and the lifespan of a satellite and, dividing the cost of the satellite by the lifespan to get sort of replacement slash maintenance CapEx plus, growth CapEx from any growth initiatives that we're including in our EBITDA growth numbers and revenue growth numbers. That gets me to at something like 10 times free cash flow, which is kind of what that $88 per share backs into when I'm putting a 12 times EBITDA minus CapEx multiple on FSS and Hughes. That gets us to 146% upside, which is just, obviously pretty significant from here. And again, it's stable. It's a stable, predictable, IP-protected duopoly. There isn't any EM risk. There's no, tariff risk. They're not levered. They have no net debt, very little net debt. So I think it's just a very stable utility stream, like, cash flow stream. And then on top of that, you get all of these free options. You get the Ka-band future value, you get Brazil, Solaris, Mexico. And I think all of those are just, provide some pretty significant upside to the company. Why does the opportunity exist? Obviously, it's important in understanding that to know why it's, the valuation gap will resolve itself. Aforementioned, the forced selling that I mentioned previously. Competitive destruction I mentioned in the satellite space with some of their competitors. People don't really understand what this IP is worth. And you have a lot of short cases out on Viasat saying, they're spending CapEx dollars stupidly. But, I don't think that's true. I think even the most sort of thoughtful short case out there by the guys at Carousel even shows that, it's not that they are destroying value, it's that, they're generating a low teens IRR on their satellites, and the market is pricing in when Viasat's trading at 15, 16 times EBITDA, the market was pricing in a lot more. SATS is trading at 3.5 times EBITDA, and their IP and sort of the quality of their sort of construction manufacturing process and their sales force, and sort of the more streamlined retail presence allows them to get a higher IRR on these satellites. So, I think this is real IP and it's very valuable. I think there's limited disclosure by the company. They're sort of coy in, future business strategies. Charlie sort of runs the business the way he wants to run it, which, I'm happy with because I have so much respect for him and trust in the way he does things. But, sometimes if he's not being super transparent with investors, that's part of the reason why the company doesn't get the multiple that, we might want. But on the flip side of that, when some of these options hit and some of these things that he's doing that he's coy about hit, that brings us even more upside to the business. I think you have sort of, I mentioned it earlier, but you have some of these issues where they're spending CapEx dollars on the new satellites. People don't understand that if you strip out sort of the growth CapEx on the Jupiter satellites, that, this thing is a free cash flow machine here. Catalysts, I think people start to realize the opportunity they have in 5G. We see continued cash flow and subscriber growth in Hughes and Jupiter 2. I think approval of Solaris. I think that's going to take time just because the issue is that there's a chance there's a windfall tax that they're going to have to pay through the EU. And so they don't want to really pay that windfall tax until they're a lot closer to 5G monetization. So, you know, I think that's that as people kind of realize that there's value to spectrum in Europe too, and that they have it, I think that'll sort of improve perception. But, you know, I don't think this is a cash flowing asset for a few more years. And then obviously, like I mentioned earlier, the first time they proactively bought back stock. So that's really it. That's kind of the overall opportunity. John, happy to answer any questions or, you know, end it.
Well, Nitin, thank you so much for updating your thesis. Certainly very, very interesting here, both in terms of what's happened over the past year as well as the valuation. Maybe a question looking out. It's clear the IP cannot be recreated easily, but do you think there's a scenario over the next decade or two where it might get obsoleted to some degree due to other wireless or wireline technologies or anything on the innovation front emerging?
So the problem is that wireless, you know, needs a large radio network, right? They need a lot of towers and a lot of base stations to offer service. And that level of densification is only greater for 5G. So if anything, you know, there's all this talk about small cells and 5G, right? And that's because in order to offer the higher throughput speeds needed in 5G, we actually need more towers. So the way that the world is moving in terms of technology upgrades and improvements, you know, it actually is moving towards more dense of a wireless network. Now, not the opposite, right? And so for these guys, you know, there's just no competition in these rural areas because the cost to build out these networks is so high. The FCC did a study several years ago that said that, you know, it was something like $6,000 to $7,000 per home passed to build out wireless, and this is LTE, this is well before 5G, to rural areas. So when you're talking about $6,000 or $7,000 to build to pass a home, whereas EchoStar can pass it at $400 right now, and you know that cost isn't changing per home, but the speeds are increasing. It's sort of the opposite, right? Because their technology is improving, right? They're going from 15 megabits per second to 25 now, to you know 15 3 years ago. 25 now, and you know, 103 years, they're improving their speeds. And that improvement in speeds is allowing them to actually leapfrog, you know, their potential competitors, right? Or so if anything, they're the ones who are, you know, innovating, not becoming obsolete.
Another question on the kind of private-public debate for this company, because in light of the valuation, it would seem that there's a case for going private. Is that at all a possible scenario in your mind?
No. So here's the interesting thing about Charlie is that what you could say is, well, Charlie wants to use the cash on the balance sheet and is going to take this company private. People have mentioned that to me. I think that is sort of the opposite of what's going to happen. Everything you've seen him do is say that, you know, he does not want to buy back stock. He doesn't want to use any of the cash on EchoStar's balance sheet to shrink the company. If he were to take this company private, he would be shrinking it, right? Because he would be using the cash to take out equity holders. He doesn't view that as a good use of capital. What he wants to, I mean, when his especially when his IRRs are so high on these satellites, and he's all about building businesses. You know, he's not sort of an equity shrink like, you know, some of the other guys in you know, Denver that are in the telecom business, like the Liberty guys. He is focused on you know, building out the business. And so the way I see it is that he'll never do that. What he's going to do is he's going to, if anything, the risk here is the opposite. He just lets sit cash start to sit and accrete to the balance sheet, and then he uses that and pursues. So we see, you know, just more and more of a lazy balance sheet over the next couple of years, and then in 3 years, when he has enough cash, he pursues, you know, a big acquisition, right? So I actually look at the opposite as the biggest risk, not, that he takes this is any sort of a take under at this price. But look, I mean, the other point to mention too is, yeah, I mean, I know this is exactly what I'm saying is that this is not going to happen. But even if he took the company out at $42, $45, right? Anybody who's listening to this who's not involved, you know, that's still a positive for them. But, you know, I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, it's not like he's going to take it out at $25, right?
Right. Nitin, that's very helpful. I'm going to leave it there. I would just encourage our members to feel free to follow up with you directly with their own thoughts and questions. And of course, I would also encourage everybody to go back and look at your previous insights into EchoStar as well. I think it's very instructive to actually track this through time and see what the thesis has been and how it's played out fundamentally as well. Thank you so
totally
much.
Totally agree. It's a great point. And thank you for all the great questions too. I appreciate it.
Thanks for being with us. Always a pleasure. Goodbye for now.
Thanks, John. You too.